John, the 14th chapter. We've been looking for the last few weeks at this passage now where Jesus says, "Let not your heart be troubled." And after that, a couple of his disciples interrupted him and kind of stole the conversation for a few moments. But now we come back and he begins to tell them why their hearts should not be troubled. I can only imagine as he told them, "Let not your heart be troubled," that they looked at him and went, "Yeah, right. You just said you were leaving. What do you mean, let not our heart be troubled?" And probably about the same reaction you'd get summer of 2020 if you said to somebody, "Let not your heart be troubled." They'd say, "Yeah, right. Corona, murder hornets, hurricanes, on down the list it goes of things that 2020 has had for us." But as we look today at the next couple of verses, Jesus gives them another reason why their heart should not be troubled. And it is, again, as I'm going to call it, the case for comfort. He's just laying out to them again. He just, in this passage, he actually ends up giving seven different reasons why they shouldn't be troubled. He's talked about their prayer life and the coming of the Spirit. But in these verses, he says something that for a moment may actually stir up their trouble just a little bit more when he says to them that in a little while, he says, "The world will see me no more." And so probably that jumped their blood pressure up for a moment. But then he goes on and says, "You will see me. Because I live, you'll live. And in that day, you'll know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you." And so I want to take those two verses this morning and look at those and talk to you for a moment about this comfort level that I hope over the last few weeks has been growing in you as you understand these promises of Christ that not only apply for these disciples, but that are available to you and I as well. And so as we look at this verse, these two verses, just a couple really simple things that we see here in this verse. First of all, there is an astonishing result. Jesus says, "In a little while, you're not going to see me anymore. The world will not see me any longer." Again, as we look at that statement, for a moment, the disciples were probably, as they heard that, they were probably even more troubled, and quite likely, and it'll take me a minute to develop this, but probably for a while, in fact, they really never completely understood. It probably somewhere over around actually Pentecost before they actually realized the complete measure of what Christ was saying here. But I find it interesting, as you notice that statement, he says, "In a little while, the world will see me no more." Well, now, why is he saying that? What is he talking about? Well, we know something that the disciples didn't know. We know the rest of the story. We know what the rest of the story goes, how the Bible tells us the remainder of the story. But the disciples, I'm sure, were standing there very confused at this point. You and I know that actually in about probably a little less than 24 hours, actually, from when Jesus says this, he's going to be arrested and crucified. And he says, from that point on, in a little while, he says, the world will see me no more. He's talking about the fact that the world, he is about to be removed from his earthly ministry. The curious thing about this, as I said, as I called this an astonishing result, the fact is the world was trying their best to be rid of Jesus. They were upset by him. They were upset by his teachings. They were upset by his methods. They were upset. They were upset by everything he did. Jesus. It didn't matter what he did. They didn't like it. They didn't like him. He healed their sick. They didn't like it. They didn't like the day he did it on. He fed them. They probably complained about the menu. Everything that he did, they complained about him. So their whole effort of this phony trial and this crucifixion was for one purpose. Let's get rid of Jesus. Well, the only problem with that is, as I said, an astonishing result come out of it. Instead of ridding themselves of Jesus, they actually brought condemnation and judgment on themselves by rejecting Jesus Christ. And so the world themselves, those who are not the followers of Christ, they lost that access that they had had for the last few years to Christ. But then he says something that changes the game. As Paul Harvey used to call it, now you know the rest of the story. Jesus says, the world will not see me. But look what he says in that next statement. He says, but you will see me. The world is going to reject. The world is going to turn against Christ. And we see that today. It's amazing even today in our day and time, the people who just simply do not see Christ. They don't want to see Christ. They don't want to see God. They look around them and see all the handiwork of God. They see the stars, the sun, the moon. They see all the things that God does. And for the most part, the world, they write it off to evolution. They write it off to chance. They write it off to luck. All kinds of things down those lines. They don't see God. But for the believer, Jesus says, but you will see me. See, for the believer, he said, again, this all goes back to let not your heart be troubled. Well, why is my heart not troubled? Because when I look around, I see the handiwork of God. When I look around, I see what God is doing. So there is, then this second statement that Jesus makes, he says there's going to be an amazing recognition. He says, but you will see. See, the world is looking around today, and the world sees things. And let me just use a couple examples. The world looks around, and I'll be honest, some of you may not like it, but I do. I've got it set up where my watch, I can, in a lot of places, I can go in, push a button, hold my watch over, it'll pay, it'll take the money out, I don't have to get out my billfold. More importantly than not having to get out my billfold, I don't have to have my billfold, which I forget about half the time. I have my watch on, but I'll forget my billfold, and that is really handy. Now, as I look at that, I say, hey, that's cool. I like that. I like being able to walk up. And there's been more than once that I've gotten to the counter, got to ready to pay, and I didn't have my billfold. Okay, hang on. And I punch the button and pay them, and I go on about my business. Now, some people see that as amazing technology. Woohoo, Apple or whoever. I look at it, and I say, I'm going to use it. I'm going to take advantage of it. But I'm also very aware that it's leading to a cashless society, as we see described in Scripture. I understand that. I see that. I look around. I can tell you the same thing if you go back to checks, the debit card itself. I see a lot of things that are leading us. When I look around, I sit out on my back porch. And y'all know by now, I don't know horticulture. I know a couple of flowers. I know roses. I know dandelions. I know clover. I know briars when I get caught in them. I know morning glories because I've hoed a pile of morning glories out of the cornfield. That's about it. I know tulips. Hey, I might know more flowers than I think I did. But I sat out on my back porch, and all down along the lake back there's this tree. And I have to look it up. I have to Google it every time I want to know what that tree is. It's real pretty. It's got like orange blossoms on it. And if I've Googled orange blossomed tree once, I've Googled it 100 times. And the name of whatever that thing is will not stick in my head. But I look down there at those, but I love them. They are the prettiest things. And nobody, y'all don't all need to come running and tell me, because I'll forget. When I want to know again, I'll Google orange blossom tree. Just save your time. Put your phone down, quit Googling orange blossom tree, because you don't know either. But you know, when I look down there and I see those orange blossom trees, you know what I see? I see God at work. I see God at work. You know what I see? And I know some of you love the mountains in the fall. You know my opinion. I don't care for the mountains in the fall. Everything's dying. I prefer the spring when everything's coming to life. You know what I see in the spring? I see God at work. I don't like lightning. Scared of lightning. Make no bones about it. I don't care what you call me. I'm getting better, but I'm still scared of lightning. But you know what? I know science says that without lightning, we would die. Look it up. What the process of lightning and what it does, it helps keep us alive. It's all part of God's plan. I look around, and because I have a relationship with God, I see Him. Just as the disciples were told, He says, the world won't see me, but you will see me. You know what I see when I look at you? When I look at you, I see God at work. I see God got a bigger project with some of you than others, but I see God at work. I see God's got His work cut out for Him, but I see God at work. I see some of you, and now having been here almost 26 years, some of you I've known now that whole 26 years, and I have watched you mature in your faith, and I've watched you grow, and I've watched God work in your life. Listen, why can we go through this world? Why can we say, let not our heart be troubled? It's because as believers, I see God. I see God. I see God working. I see God all the time. You know, listen, and I'm not hallucinating. He says to us, it's what Jesus promised us. He says, the world won't see me, but you will. You will. You know, I look around, I'm not going to lie and tell you, I'm not telling you I'm some super spirit. You know, I'm just telling you that when I stop and think and I look, I see God moving and working. You know, I look at this row of Andersons back here. And I see God at work, how God, through Tommy and Rhonda, as godly parents, poured into to Norma Jean and little Tommy, not little Tommy anymore, medium Tommy, and poured into him. And now Tommy is doing the same into his children. And you see that in them, and you see God at work. Listen, as unbelievers go through life thinking life is this random series of chances and petri dishes and weird things that just happen. And it's like saying an explosion goes off in a print shop and a dictionary falls out. It's the way some of the world looks at the things of this world. Spend about 10 minutes reading anything about evolution, and you'll come away going, what? Yeah. It's way easier for me to believe that God spoke and in 6 days created the world than it is for me to believe that something from outer space struck upon, brought life, and some ism gathered together, grew a tail, eventually grew feet, eventually walked out in the water, got rid of its gills, grew lungs, decided to stand up on 2 feet and become a human. Yeah. It's much easier for me to see God. Much easier. I have one question for the evolutionist. If we evolved from monkeys, why are there still monkeys? Why did not all the monkeys turn into humans? Did we just outrun them? I don't understand. It's much easier for me to believe that God said and God rested. It's much simpler for me to believe that. Why? I've shared with you before the Nobel Prize winner who said, when I was given the, if I'm given the option of believing, and this is a roughly direct quote, I'm not going to get it perfect, but said, if I'm given the option of believing the story of evolution, which I know cannot be true, or believing the biblical account of creation, I will believe evolution. You know what? He's in that first group that says, you will not see God. Can I tell you something this morning? If you're a child of God, your heart doesn't have to be troubled. Because if you look around, you will see God. You will see Him at work. You will see Him moving. You will see Him touching people's lives. You will see Him healing. You will see Him changing marriages. You will see Him restoring